This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise. He's been called the Martin Luther King of the Green Jobs Movement. Van Jones is the founder of Green for All, an organization that advocates for green worker training, counsels local governments on how to set and meet energy-saving goals, and mentors leaders in low-income communities to become frontrunners in this emerging economic field. In addition to Green for All, Van Jones founded two social justice organizations, the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and Color of Change. Author of New York Times bestseller, The Green Collar Economy, Van served under President Barack Obama as the Special Advisor for Green Jobs, Enterprise, and Innovation, and in 2009 was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. Jones is currently a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, where he leads their Green Opportunity Initiative, and is a visiting fellow at Princeton University.
You know, where does hope come from, really? It usually doesn't come from Washington, D.C., and usually doesn't come from big energy companies. It, you know, usually comes from the individual human heart that just refuses to, you know, see their kids grow up in a country worse than the one they grew up. It usually comes from, you know, a small handful of people who have a dream around a product or a service they want to bring out into that big marketplace against all odds.
Environmental advocate and civil rights activist Van Jones, this week on Sea Change Radio. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is the co-founder of Green for All and a visiting faculty member at Princeton University, Van Jones. Van, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
I'm honored to be a part of the program.
Van, how do we make the green job movement relevant for people of all education levels? I mean, what's the way out for people who are in a disadvantaged situation?
You know, the good thing about it is that the green economy is good for the PhDs and it's good for the PhDs. It's good for the people who are, you know, have on the green lab coats. It's good for the people who have on the green hard hats. The wingspan on these jobs is so tremendous. I mean, you know, somebody who's maybe starts out as a, you know, on a crew putting up solar panels, in a couple of years, they can go on to become a crew leader and then maybe an owner. And then an inventor, an investor, the green ladder of opportunity is, you know, almost endless. And so, what we got to be able to do though is make sure that there are enough rungs on that ladder so people can begin to climb it. That requires educational programs. You know, the president included in the recovery package $500 million for the Green Jobs Act, which I was fortunate to be a part of pushing for in its early conceptions. And that money is at the Department of Labor being used to train the workforce of tomorrow. Some of those dollars were designated and dedicated directly to former auto workers to get them to be able to switch over and become workers in, you know, building wind turbines, et cetera. So what we have is an opportunity for entry-level workers and these old blue-collar workers to become green collar workers. And one of the things we have to really push back against, Alex, is this idea, certainly everybody in America should have the right to go to college, but you shouldn't have to go and get a four-year degree to be able to have dignified work and feed your family and make a contribution to this country. We've got to go back to the idea that the middle class can and should include people who don't have college degrees, but maybe they have a vocational degree or a two-year degree, but they're doing something critical for our economic competitiveness. They're doing something critical for our environmental security, and they can be and should be respected. And so getting our community colleges, our vocational programs, and our labor unions working hard to train the workers of tomorrow, not just in designing new technologies, as important as that is, but also installing it, implementing it, repairing it, improving it, making sure America has access to the best of the clean and green products of the future.
What are some of the things that shout out at you in terms of what's being done policy-wise to promote green jobs and growth in the sector?
Well, you know, I am most focused right now on the logjam and food fight here in Washington, D.C. As you know, there had been a presumption that there would be a climate bill this year and that it would be a bill that was supported by both parties, by environmentalists, community folks, labor unions, and business. There was every reason to expect that because, you know, even John McCain and Barack Obama, when they were running against each other, the one thing they never debated and never fought about was climate change and cap and trade, because both candidates agreed that climate change was a big issue and that the way to deal with it was cap and trade. So you can go back and look at, you know, all the debates that they had. You'll never see them disagree about this point. That's because there was no disagreement.
Well, you know, many people, myself included, felt a little bit of a letdown after the 08 election, and we're hoping for more and faster change to believe in. But as someone who worked inside the Obama administration and is now a little bit more of a dreaded quote-unquote Washington insider, so now, after seeing it from the inside out a little bit more, what do you think would be different on the climate and environmental front if John McCain were president today?
Well, it's just hard to say because, I mean, one of the things that happened was that, you know, you had this sort of wall of no, this wall of opposition from the Republican Party, even on things that they had agreed on before the election. For instance, most liberals and progressives would have been just as happy to just regulate carbon pollution and just have the EPA under the Clean Air Act just tell these polluters to stop polluting or to pollute less every year and be done with it. And you know, but to try to get a bipartisan approach rather than treating this massive dumping of carbon pollution into our atmosphere as a regulatory failure and having the government mandate reductions, we tried to treat it like a market failure and say, okay, well, maybe it's not a question of too few regulations, maybe it's just a question of too low cost or too little of a price on carbon. Let's figure out some way to get a price on carbon. And we went down that road trying to court a bipartisan solution, trying to court business support, and then, you know, got cut off at the pass. And so I think that, you know, now I would be supportive of going back to our original ideas as progressives. You know, we don't have to do all this fancy footwork with, you know, setting up, you know, carbon trading schemes, et cetera. We, you know, that's a little bit confusing for Americans. Why don't we just have the EPA tell these polluters to pollute less? The Supreme Court, no liberal bunch of people then, no Berkeley radicals on the Supreme Court. Supreme Court says the EPA has the authority under the Clean Air Act right now to mandate reductions. And I think we should embrace that authority and defend that authority and go ahead and get the problem solved. And I think that for people who had turned our eyes to D.C., hoping that with this level of economic crisis, this level of global crisis, two wars, this level of environmental crisis, that we would be able to find some bipartisan cooperation, at least on the main issues. I think we've all had to sober up a bit. And but I don't think that we can walk away and leave the job undone.
This is Alex Wise. My guest on Sea Change Radio is Van Jones, the co-founder of Green for All.
Here's an excerpt from Van Jones's book, The Green Collar Economy. Many of the best people in the country and the world have not been heard from yet. Many of the best ideas have not yet surfaced or been taken to scale. As the green wave encompasses more people, it will produce more innovation, inventiveness, and passion than we can possibly appreciate or imagine. Just as there are unimaginable bad things on the horizon, there are also unimaginable good things, and I am betting on them. Now is not the time to shrink from the challenge of saving our only home in the universe. Now is not the time to pull into ourselves, retreating into either a survivalist or an escapist mode. To the contrary, this is the time for titans, not turtles. Now is the time to open our arms, expand our horizons, and dream big.
Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we wanna? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Great gosh almighty.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory. Now back to our discussion with environmental advocate Van Jones on Sea Change Radio.
I heard you on an interview you just pretty recently with David Sirota on his program in Colorado. I remember you said that even with the overwhelming majority of Americans in favor of aggressive climate change legislation, when politicians take a stand on the issue, it's somehow painted as courageous. And I think that's a great point. But what do you think needs to be done to make it less courageous?
Well, my point holds. I'm not quite sure if you look at the polling data why it's courageous. The vast majority of Americans agree that global warming is a serious problem. Vast majority of Americans agree that they're willing to make some sacrifices to help us transition to a cleaner economy. The vast majority of Americans agree that the jobs of the future are likely to be in clean energy and want America to lead. The only reason it's courageous is because you've got to be willing to turn down money from oil companies and maybe have people on Fox News say bad stuff about you.
So you think it's really a niche of our big business community that's setting us back, it sounds like. I mean, there are big corporations in Europe, of course, and many of them do a lot of business in the U.S. And while we get our news and information from an American perspective, of course, you really don't hear as much from the European climate change battle about a dichotomy between what's generally accepted as the right thing to do and profits.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're 100% right. I mean, my basic view is that the vast majority of the business community in this country is for American leadership and being innovative, being entrepreneurial. There's nothing innovative about using this, you know, these century-old, you know, pollution-based fossil fuels. And you know, you got a planet now, 6 billion, soon to be 9 billion people. All of them are going to want, you know, a car, a refrigerator, an iPod. It's clear whatever country figures out a way to diversify its energy portfolio and export clean energy products as opposed to importing dirty energy is gonna be a leader and going to make a huge contribution. That's what Americans want to do. Most of the business community just says, give us certainty, give us regulatory certainty, and we'll make the investments and we'll do the inventions and we'll do the innovation, we'll figure it out. The problem is you've got a small section of self-interested actors who keep throwing marbles on the stairs, banana peels on the sidewalk, and doing everything that they can to prevent us from actually acting as one country in the face of this huge energy and environmental challenge. And as long as Americans put up with that, we're going to continue to fall behind, you know, Asia and Europe on technologies that we developed. The American taxpayer put the money on the table to invent solar panels and to invent wind turbines and to invent smart batteries and to invent a bunch of this stuff. And now European and Asian companies, God bless them, are taking up those technologies and beating us to death with them by having a better regulatory and policy environment for their entrepreneurs.
So do you think this goes back to entrenched political problems, or is it linked in with our perception and the media's spinning of issues? I mean, it's a great point. I mean, if somebody is in favor of something that the vast majority of Americans are for, why is that courageous? If you're just watching not even Fox News, a regular network broadcast, you may see that word, like, this senator is taking a courageous stand on climate change. It's definitely one that makes you wonder what kind of reality we're all in.
Well, I think that's true. You know, it is conceivable that, you know, maybe after this election's over and people have had a chance to sort of get their frustrations out, that we'll get back to solving real problems. I hope so.
You ain't got to be so bad, got to be so cold. This doggy dog is just as short as getting old. Got to have a Jones for this, Jones for that. This running with the Joneses, boy, just ain't where it's at. You're gonna come back around. To the sad, sad truth, the dirty law down. Got you thinking like that, boy.
This is Alex Wise. My guest on Sea Change Radio is Van Jones, the co-founder of Green for All. I read a question that you posed. You asked the question, but I'm going to ask you to answer it here. You said, how do we restore hope at a time when change is so hard?
Well, where does hope come from, really? You know, it usually doesn't come from Washington, D.C. It usually doesn't come from big energy companies. It, you know, usually comes from, the individual human heart that just refuses to, see their kids grow up in a country worse than the one they grew up in. It usually comes from, a small handful of people who have a dream around a product or a service they want to bring out into that big marketplace against all odds. That's really what, fundamentally where hope comes from. Hope is hard to maintain in a robust sense. But it's also hard to destroy. It's amazing quality of the human spirit. People are easily discouraged, but they're hard to defeat. Eventually these good ideas do push through. And I think most of us had hoped that 2008 would represent some kind of a finish line in American politics. It turns out it was more of a starting line. But we can catch our breaths and run another lap or two if we have to.
Since we were talking about the Obama administration a little bit, the controversy leading to your resignation from the Obama administration strikes me as quite similar to the tactics of climate denialists in a lot of ways. What lessons have you drawn from your personal episode in that instance that may be useful on a broader level?
Well, I don't know that I'm the right person to draw the lesson, since I'm probably too close to it really to think about it as clearly as others. What I do think is that that was probably a moment for a lot of progressives where we realized that this was not going to be a fair fight, that some of the basic rules of politics were not going to apply to the administration or to supporters of the administration, and that we were in a new media moment where right-wing bloggers and certain personalities on Fox News and a growing, at that point, brand new development in American politics, now called it the Tea Party, we're going to take some time to figure out how to deal with. And I think that we're still at that moment where, from the Breitbarts, to whatever, where the information system has now gotten much bigger, more ubiquitous, but the wisdom system in the country to really sort through all the noise and make sense of things has yet to catch up. So there's a lag between our information system and our wisdom system. And some of us, got caught in that lag. But I still have confidence that over the long term, just like with the Shirley Sherrod case, eventually the country begins to wise up and figure out some of these tactics and stunts and over time, the country will be wiser and better and be able to utilize these technologies for good. But the early days of the Obama administration really, I think, represented a change in the way the media system operated vis-a-vis, truth and facts and fairness and that kind of thing here in D.C.
I think the wisdom element of it is definitely being removed. It's kind of counterintuitive because as we've received more and more ways to get our information, it's actually created a way for people on the far left and people on the far right to be able to just only get that information filtered that they kind of want. So there's people who can go through an entire day of going on the internet at work and turning on the TV in the morning or at night and pretty much getting that same message that they've kind of almost on a pay-per-view level.
Well, I think that's right. And, I've had to work hard myself, on my Twitter. Luckily, a lot of right-wingers will tweet about me so I can find them relatively easy, I follow them. So on my Twitter feed, I have, conservatives and liberals, and it's kind of interesting being able to kind of monitor all day long what people are saying and what's and the differences and that kind of thing. But I can't say I spend a lot of time on, Breitbart's websites. I'm usually over on Huffington Post where I feel like, facts matter a little bit more. So I do think that we've got a growing divide. For instance, very few conservatives, if you poll them or talk to them, know that I have a Yale law degree, that I'm a best-selling author, that I was one of the authors of the Green Jobs Act, or one of the initiators of the Green Jobs Act 2007, signed by George Bush, that my best-selling book was published by Harper One, owned by Rupert Murdoch. You know what I mean?
But you're a communist, right?
Exactly.
Because what was the story behind? You actually didn't even sign this thing, what was the story?
Some 9/11 truth organization put my name on their website and said I'd signed something. They later on admitted I never signed anything. But in the meantime, damage was done. But the point being that, people who are progressives have, if you say Van Jones, have a completely different Muppet character in their head than if you say Van Jones to conservatives. And I'm the same guy. And I have a colorful background as an activist. But at this point, I'm 42 years old. I'm a dad. I'm a homeowner and employer. You have this division even over a single person, let alone over, policy and that kind of stuff. So that is going to be tough to get over. I think that what we've got to be able to stay focused on, though, is that our ideas are not just good ideas because, we're progressives. They're good ideas because they actually can solve problems for real people in red states and blue states. I would love for us to spend more time talking about how folks in rural America would benefit from clean energy policy that was sane and forward-looking. We would, I think, benefit really well from saying, hey, we can get three paychecks to rural America, red state America, right now if we had sane climate policy. You got some land, you could put up a wind turbine, and you get $10,000 to $20,000 just to watch it spin per wind turbine per year. You're probably not going to lose your family farm. You got a couple of those sticking in the ground. Number two, you could grow an energy crop, hopefully not a food-based energy crop, but maybe algae or something like that, get a paycheck there. And then third, if you are doing regular agriculture, you could use advanced agricultural techniques to capture carbon in the soil, sequester carbon, and then join a co-op and play in the carbon markets for that service, and have a third paycheck, three paychecks for you if we had sane climate policy. Because we don't, rural red state constituents are losing their family farms, are finding themselves less and less economically competitive and viable because they could be not just in the food business, they could be in the energy business on the same land. And we are failing them, and their party, I think, is feeling them in that regard.
What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. It's that love's the need of love today. Don't delay, send your
Now back to our discussion with Van Jones on Sea Change Radio.
Do you want to mention any sites that listeners would go to for all things Van Jones?
I think the main thing I would say is, you know, you can follow me on Twitter, VanJones68 on Twitter. That's my handle. I'm sporadic, but when I do see cool stuff out there, I try to get it around to my quote-unquote followers. And I'm also on Facebook. And most importantly, you should sign up at Green for All, not Green for Some, greenforall.org. And sign up for emails from that organization as well.
Van Jones, co-founder of Green for All and a visiting faculty member currently at Princeton University. Thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Sway the future to the past. Find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Charles Erlin, Boz Skaggs, Alan Toussaint, and Stevie Wonder. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Kuva Coffee Company, Sungevity Solar Home Specialists, 100 Watt Network, and Invisible Structures, a sustainable paving company. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Stuart Brand, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.